Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. This is an episode of Swords and Mental Health with me, your host, Fran Laquarta, regular guest Jonathan Tarhan, and Kimberly Roseblade. We speak on the topic of second chances and cancel culture. The episode was recorded 31st January 2022.
Hello!
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 Hello, lovely!
We're all here!
Kimmy!
Hi!
Hi!
How are you, lovely friend?
I'm good.
Huh. Oh my goodness, so many things. It's a new moon. It is almost Imbolc. It is the lunar new year happening on a new moon.
Uh-huh.
Year of the tiger.
Tiger.
Year of the tiger, baby.
Yeah. Fiore thought the tiger was like a weird kind of like if a greyhound and a rat ended up having a one.
What?
You know, it's in line with HEMA. We got like your dress.
Yeah. You need to bring that up when we start recording.
All I can tell you is I sure the fuck feel like a rat. The greyhound.
Right. I mean, I'm quite happy to go with this, to be honest. This is pretty good.
Okay.
So welcome to another episode of Swords and Mental Health with me, Fran Laquarta. I'm your host, and I have my regular guests, Jana Dattarhan and also Kimberly Roseblade. And as you've heard, we're talking about the new year and what it brings. So Fiore was interpreting things too, by the sounds of it. So his interpretation of a tiger was pretty out there. So let's hope our interpretation of his work is not quite as skew-if as that. Being a new year, it's a chance to start again. You know, we're hoping that 2022 is going to be the year when we can start to recover from everything, the sort of collective trauma of the last couple of years. Yeah. But the thing that we wanted to talk about today is something that we've kind of touched on in previous episodes, which is cancel culture and second chances. So let me start with Kimmy. And if you can just talk us through what, you know, being cancelled is a very modern concept. What does that entail?
So in my point of view, what getting cancelled means is a group of individuals or a community have come to a impasse with an individual where there are now consequences to a continuation of harmful actions to other folks, usually ones who belong to a more marginalized group within the community. And what ends up happening is certain things get revoked. This could be something such as your rights to come train at a HEMA club, or depending on the severity of the harm done to other community members, this could surpass even the club environment, where it can go on to potentially have consequences, even legally. So there we go.
But that's in the context of HEMA. On a sort of wider scale, we see people getting cancelled, like, in general. Like, a good example is, like, J.K. Rowling.
Yes.
So, obviously, unless you've been living under a rock, you'll know that this author has, alienated or, created a lot of anger and upset in the LGBT community because of their trans-exclusionary radical feminist views, their TERF on trans women. And, that's an interesting one, because where people are cancelling, even the actors in the movies are, you know, taking a stand against the author, but they still support the body of work that J.K. Rowling created. I think that's quite interesting. Jonna, you've been reading a lot of fiction lately.
Yeah. I've had to grapple with that with a lot of things. But, like, just studying literature for, like, a really long time, it's been, like a decade of just taking, like, literature classes of, like, different kinds. Mm. There's that idea of, not really removing, but, like, separating the author from the work.
Yeah.
That, and I know that not everybody agrees with it, but I happen to be on the side of, you know, it is possible to take the body of work and acknowledge the fact that, like, there are a lot of useful things within the text, and the author, the person who created it, is just an awful person. You know, and I know not everybody agrees with that. I, on the other hand, agree, you know, that there are things that you can still, you know, learn from it. Like, J.K. Rowling created a really great, you know, world with Harry Potter, and a lot of people still like it. But, you know,
interesting how so much of the aspects of the world of Harry Potter are all about, like, trying to be inclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think a lot of neurodivergent and a lot of, you know, LGBTQ people, like, really, like, you know, was drawn toward that, because when the Harry Potter books were coming out, I was still a kid, and, you know, I wasn't a popular kid, so, you know, back in grade school. But, you know, I think a lot of the appeal of it is that you're like what Kimmy was talking about. It's that inclusion, because it is kind of like a world where there's still like the you know, kind of like a segregation, though. You still have those people calling people who aren't like pure wizard blood like mudbloods and stuff like that. So there is like a reflection and a commentary of like the world that we are living in. But like having that magical aspect, I think, is really what drew people in. But again, you know, she's a TERF and she's a terrible person. And, you know, but that doesn't take away the fact that like people still cherish these stories just as much as, you know, like I am a fan of the Lovecraftian Cthulhu mythos. Like, but there is a movement of like, you know, people of color who love the mythology, and people who say it's Lovecraft without Lovecraft, because he was a racist. You know, he was a terrible person. So that's kind of like my stand on that. Again, I know not everybody's going to agree with that. I've had friends who like vehemently like say, no, it's racist. I don't understand why you like it. It's just, I just like what I like, you know?
This is an example, though, of when you have to weigh potentially the body of work against how bad the offense is, as well as, one, can you find some good, you know, jewels and gems within their body of work that are completely separate from any racist or sexist or turfy ideals? Or is their work kind of garbage to begin with, and throwing out the baby and the bathwater ain't a bad idea?
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's to sort of keep it HEMA briefly.
Yes.
there are a lot of, I can think of two. I can think of, well, probably all of the masters that we learn from, that we study from. I'm pretty sure their views were not very nice by today's standards. The two that stick out the most are Swetnam, who published very misogynistic pamphlets, just absolutely hated women. And then, of course, there's George Silver, that both English men, you notice, who was really, really xenophobic and just did not like foreigners at all.
Well, you have those. I'm not super like 100% like well versed in the manuscripts, but like I did see one, and I've used it on my TikToks where like there's a guy in the hole, and with a woman and like
Talhofer.
Yeah. Like they have those things too, and you know, like just add it. I mean, what I've like seen as a whole, there's not a lot of women in the presentation of any of that too. But again, like, you know, I love Hema, I love swords, even though we're very, very much underrepresented in the original traditions.
Study stuff from, let's say, masters like George Silver, who's, you know, has given us some great, despite his like absolute xenophobia, True Time is awesome. Don't get me wrong. And I think it's something that every fencer can benefit from. So again, like, where do we draw the line? Yeah.
I think there's something interesting you said, Kimmy, where it was about when you started out, when I asked you for a description of what cancel culture is, and you talked about it in the context of the Hema community. What caught my attention was when you said continuous. So it's like continuous offenses. Someone is consistently, you know, behaving badly, whether that's online, in person, you know, upsetting people, hurting people, causing, you know, just disruption in some way, and just making, giving everyone a, you know, being the reason why we can't have nice things.
Yes.
so, it, you know, it's continuous. And I was thinking, like, continuous versus one-off. I mean, if it was a one-off thing, how bad would it have to be? And continuous kind of implies that there's second chances already going on.
Yeah.
And the severity of the harm done and the severity of the offense, I think, again, can greatly weigh, like, for example, if we have someone in the club who's, you know, not that this, you know, should be a get out of jail free card, but an older person who maybe belongs to the cis het white boomer generation, maybe lets go like an off key comment, maybe throwing out a homophobic slur. If you pull that person aside and speak with them and you let them know that that's not okay, and if I was doing this personally, I'd also let them know that, like, hi, by the way, your instructor is queer and this don't fly here at all. And then if they make a continued attempt to, like, correct themselves, change their act, see what, you know, like, okay, sorry, you're right. I probably shouldn't say that. Thanks for pointing that out. Whereas, what happens if you have a student that comes up to you and tells you that they're being sexually harassed by another student? Now we're looking at a single potential offense that has a much more severe
impact. For sure.
Because this is a form of self-policing, isn't it? We don't have, I mean, you should have, you know, you've got obviously leaders of clubs and things are a form of authority within the sort of micro community of a club, but within the sort of general Hema community, we don't have any kind of anyone to go to when someone is being a problem. We don't have any bodies to sort of report to.
Yeah.
So like cancel culture in general, like in wider society, is a form of self-policing.
Community policing,
yeah. Like if you have a Facebook group, for example, is a good example. It happens all the time. Someone's a dick, they get banhammered. So you know,
I haven't heard that term in a long time.
Yeah.
Banhammered.
So get out the banhammer and
get out the banhammers.
Unleash. And you know, there's always like accusations of witch hunts when this happens, which I think is quite amusing.
Yeah.
Well, as someone who's a pagan and a witch, I'm happy to go hunting anytime.
I'm a witch and I'm hunting.
I'm a witch and I got great tits. Well, that's another TikTok that I follow. Anyways, moving on. So, witch hunting, community policing.
Yeah. Where does the accusation of witch hunt come from?
Usually a bunch, again, scared white middle-aged men who are kind of afraid of the power that minorities or people that they view as minorities might have over them.
Mm. Sure. Because the phrase witch hunt kind of implies that there's a certain type of person who's being actively sought out and persecuted.
Usually I feel like because it's a difference in opinion. Like you're whatever it is that you're expressing goes against everybody else's general attitude towards something. But I feel like used in the context of today, I feel like it's sometimes like used in a way that it's not necessarily like true to the actual like history of the word, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think witch hunt can often be used by people to try to suppress dissent.
Yeah.
Or like if someone's rubbing people up the wrong way and people speak up about it, or they go, right, we're not going to tolerate this person anymore.
Yeah.
That's when the accusations of witch hunts start to come along. And it's almost, and it doesn't.
Oh, no, there's consequences for my shitty actions.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
And it's not even these kind of like terms don't even come from the perpetrators. It comes from the enablers of the perpetrators.
Usually.
The sort of liberal people in the middle who...
No. You can't be in the middle and even use the term liberal.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Just, the ones who aren't affected by the action.
Bingo.
But they can't see the problem.
Well, even if they see the problem, here's the thing, is that the problem at hand has never personally affected them. In fact, often it hasn't even started to affect them until other people come up to them, especially if they are someone who is in a position of authority or a leader in the club, and say, hey, a bunch of us have had a multitude of problems. We've documented it with this person. You need to do something. Mm. Then they go, oh, well, this person's never been a problem before. Or
enter. I hate that kind of response. It's dismissive. So
typical. Please, I would love if the story that I am telling right here was like, wow, Kim, astounding. That's very unfamiliar. I don't even know what you're talking about. Mm. Unfortunately, this is a very normal response. And then the way that this gets handled, or should I say not handled, is by folks trying to make it seem, and this is a form of subtle gaslighting, probably stemming from some deeper unknown sense of guilt that you know damn well you've been an enabler.
Mm.
So instead, you bite the head off the people telling you that there is a problem. Instead of, like, use the missing staircase analogy. Instead of going, fixing the missing staircase that keeps giving people problems and hurting people as they're trying to go up and down the stairs, you end up kicking out the person that goes, hey, are you aware that there's a missing staircase? Oh, it's never been a problem before. Most people just learn how to jump. In fact, you know what? I don't have the money to replace the missing stair. Who, you know what? Fuck you for saying something.
So when can it, the sort of people that throw out the witch hunting things, they tend to be the types that just don't want the boat rocked. They're quite happy with the way things are. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're taking away my HEMA and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing, that's the kind of outrage that I guess this is another form of enabling that covers for, perpetrators of problematic behavior in the community. Because it's like a kind of diversion, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when can this sort of self community policing, if we call it, when can it go wrong?
In what regard? Because there's many ways that it can go wrong.
Well, I'm thinking, like, you know, this is about 90% of this stuff is online, isn't it? Because that's where most of the fighting happens. That was where most of the debating, well, I wouldn't even call it debating, where most of the falling outs and stuff happens. Obviously, the really harmful stuff happens in person, but the stuff,
a lot of the conversations, and I feel like a lot of the discourse happens the conversations, online now. Most of the time,
and that's when people fall out. So, you know, what can go wrong is, like, obviously people falling out. Another thing that can go wrong, I think of an example of mine that I'm quite very humbled to admit. Is when I saw someone who kept trying to join various online groups that I was in, and they had, to me, a very dodgy looking profile. They looked very shady. When I started doing HEMA, it was very kind of like, oh, you're a sword person, you've got a sword in your profile picture, I'll be your friend, kind of thing. Now, I don't do that. I don't just add anyone just because they do HEMA.
You're not a neo-Nazi.
I actually learned that lesson pretty recently.
Yeah, don't add everyone just because they do swords.
There's some weird sword people out there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I thought that this person was an alt account for a group of neo-Nazis that were going doing the rounds. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, I went out of my way to keep this person out, and it turned out that it wasn't, and I publicly apologized to them.
You took accountability for your actions. Shocker.
So, you know, and then I was very sorry and I let them in, but it was kind of like the fact that we've got this kind of case where we have to keep people out because they will just be persistent and keep trying to get in using various different alternative accounts means that you end up becoming, like I've just described myself, like, you end up becoming less trusting of people, more cynical, and quick to judge.
I think there is
situations sometimes you have to, and as martial artists you have to make quick situations. I don't have you in person, but I'm looking through things on your Facebook. I'm noticing some questionable material. I have people in my group that are, you know, people of color that are part of the LGBTQ community. And unless I am sure that you're not going to say something, especially with the false sense of confidence that being online can give folks that doesn't necessarily translate over in person, if I'm not sure, guess what? I'm taking the risk with the most vulnerable population first, foremost, and always. That's just me.
I think as a person of color, I am very, very suspicious of, and it's just the way it is. You know, I'm very suspicious
considering where you live
of white people. I really am. Like, I really have to, like, watch them and see what they say. Like, I really have to do my own due diligence when I'm, you know, when I'm being befriended by a white person, because, you know, just. And again, you know, that's not, I'm not saying that, like, everybody is a bad person, but, like, there are, I'm given enough reasons, both from my personal experiences and just, like, historically, you know, how people were and are still, because I've had experiences where, you know, it seemed like the friendship was very well-meaning, and then I was tokenized later on. And that's something that I do not want to experience again. And, you know, just the feeling of being, like, used to justify certain things, like, to justify certain shitty behaviors, to justify certain, like, problematic ideas, it's gross to be used as, oh yeah, but, you know, I dated this girl and she's Asian, or, oh yeah, I dated this girl and she's immigrant, like, I can say all of these crappy things. Like, no, Like, I am not, like, I'm not your force field. I'm not, you know, I'm not here to justify whatever crappy behaviors. And that's something that I see all the time, you know, in white people, even well-meaning ones. And so I am very.
That trust has to be earned.
And I'm very, and honestly, like, even people that I think, like, I liked, and I'm like, looking at them, like, what are your attitudes on these things? And sometimes I'd be, like, crushing on a guy, and then, like, I'll start, like, seeing the stuff that, like, they would comment on and stuff that they say, and I'm like, I don't know if I really like you that much.
Oh, that's gross. That's gross, Jonna.
It is gross. Yes. But yeah, like, honestly though, because, like, how is that, like, how is that going to, like, benefit me? Because I have done that in the past. I've tried, like, I'm never, and this is something I've told people, like, I'm never gonna, like, raise another person aside from my child or whatever children I'll have in the future, but I'm not about to raise another problematic man. Like, I'm not about to, like, raise, like, whatever, like, opinion or, like, whatever, like, experiences I share with my friends and people who listen to me, that is, like, voluntary, like, education that I give to people. Oh. It is not my responsibility, which is why I hate it when people say, oh, educate me. Like, no, educate your damn self. That is your own, you know, that is your own responsibility. But, like, whatever you're getting from me, great. But I'm not going to go out of my way to keep doing that, because I did that for most of my 20s, trying to, like, you know, stir certain partners into, like, seeing why certain beliefs that they have and certain jokes that they make are, you know, are misogynistic, and, you know, it's very, you know, it's very racist and all that. And, you know, it's exhausting to do that. And I don't want to do that for anyone anymore. And just being, like, critical, like, that's what Kimmy said. Like, it's something that, you know, trust is something that you have to earn. And, like, historically, as people of color, we are given reasons why we are very careful around certain groups of people. Like, it sounds silly to some people, but honestly, like, living in Utah, living in such a white, almost homogenous state is kind of scary.
I only imagine.
You know, there are days where I'd be in a place and I catch myself thinking this involuntarily sometimes. You know, I'd be in the grocery store or I'd be in a restaurant and I'll be, like, the only person of color. And then, like, a dark, you know, thought comes into my head. Like, what if one of them starts, like, harassing me? Where do I go? Like, I start looking for, like, exits. You know, I'll start, like, thinking about, like, what are my strategies for dealing with this? Like, especially with how 2020 transpired against Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. You know, that definitely, you know, like, definitely instilled a lot of fear in myself. And, you know, and maybe people think that I'm a happy-go-lucky person just because of how I present myself on social media, but I was swimming in a lot of fear, and I still am. Not as bad as I used to be, because I'm usually, like, around white people, and, you know, like, I use their privilege as, like, a protection when I go out, but that sounds terrible though, but, like, that's always been an observation of mine, is that if I'm by myself versus if I'm, like, with my white friends, I get treated a little better. Yeah. And I hate that.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, like, it's weird.
Proved a really good point, where a lot of folks, particularly if they belong to a more privileged class, these are things they never have to think about when they walk into a club to train, go to the grocery store, because more often than not, the baseline in which they are going to be treated is going to be fine. Whereas you, as a femme-presenting person of color, your baseline is not that reality.
No, that's why I'm really grateful that, like, my current club, you know, I have, like, people there that I trust that, like, you know, if somebody, like, starts to inquire about the club and they start, like, talking about, like, heritage and that they want to, like, learn stuff because, like, this is, like, their culture and stuff and all that, like, that's usually, like, almost like a red flag to some of us.
And that is a red flag.
You know what I mean? Because like, and again, being new to martial arts, the first time I heard it, I was like, that's kind of uncomfortable. And then I thought about, the more I thought about it, like, there are people of different, like, races, like, doing Filipino martial arts, doing, you know, Japanese, like, martial arts. Like, it's not necessarily, like, yes, it is a culture thing, but it's not, like, a culture, like, exclusive thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a sport. So, it is kind of, I'm starting to, like, realize that, because at first I was like, am I just being uncomfortable with this just because I'm a person of color, or is it really a red flag? And the more I think about it, and then, you know, the more I see my friend's attitude towards it, like you just said, it is a red flag. About other friends who say it is a red flag. And so, like, my instinct was, that's kind of a red flag to me personally. And then, like, just having other people say it kind of confirms that it is. So
it is. I mean, if I went to a screamer class and I said to the people there, oh, I want to do this, I want to get in touch with my heritage, this is because, you know, I'm half Filipino, and so this is for my ancestors, and I want to get in touch with my people, I think that'd be the most cringe thing to say.
Yeah.
In a classroom full of, you know, people from all kinds of backgrounds, you know, probably hardly anyone there would be Filipino, and it would just be a really odd thing to say.
It really is, because, like, I've had and I know they meant well, but, like, it made me uncomfortable, because I've had other Filipino Americans ask me, like, you're doing German longsword and you're doing French small sword, why don't you do, you know, Eskrima, why don't you do Filipino martial arts, like, you know, be one with your, I'm like, no, this is, like, I'm not doing it just because, like,
that's not the reason, like, why,
you know,
I'm trying,
I just like swords because it's cool. Like, there's also that tinge of, like, almost like shaming in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, oh yeah, you're Filipino, like, born and raised, like, why are you not practicing your FMA? So there's also that, like, facet of that. There's also that perspective. And I'm like, yes, but also, like, I just like what I like. Like, that has nothing to do with, like, my identity as a Filipino. So there's that. Like, it is, like, cringy in all fronts, though, when you
think, like, about it that way. I mean, I think I cringe hard whenever anyone says anything like that, whether they're white or
yeah,
Asian or whatever.
I agree.
Really cringe thing to say. But yeah. But on the deeper level, like you say, it does have white supremacist, you know, when people say, oh, I want to do HEMA because I want to get in touch with my ancestors and all that stuff, you know, it's very, alarm bells start ringing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So when does someone, if someone's been cancelled and, you know, the community shut them out, they're out on their ass, or at least a part of the community has shut them off, They will always find somewhere to flourish. But when does someone deserve to be welcomed back like a prodigal son or daughter? When does someone deserve a second chance? Kimmy?
I believe that there's kind of two things that you need to keep in mind and take into account when considering this. First, again, what was the severity and the harm of the offense done? So, you know, that might mean that there is no chance of a second chance ever. Then the next thing is, let's just say that, you know, the severity or harm done or the people that have been harmed are potentially open to a reconciliation and bringing a person back. And what we need to look at is words, you know, saying the nice thing versus actionable, like, real active accountability towards change.
And yeah,
it might be, here's what I have done since X.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I, like, you know, let's just say you have a problematic student who was consistently hitting way too hard or getting worked up during sparring. They're like, you know what? I've been going to anger management classes for 2 months now. And I've now put in these, and these practices. And I think when I come back, I should just come back for classes doing nothing more than drills. And we will work back up to maybe me being able to spar again. That right there shows not just, oh, I'm sorry that I hit hard, please let me back in.
Yeah.
Already, What's their plan of action to continue down that road? And what are the sort of checkpoints that are going to be put in along a way to keep them accountable? And that's what I think needs to be considered if someone is deserving or has earned a second chance.
Yeah. And when we say actionable, active accountability, that isn't just posting, D&I, diversity and inclusion memes on your Facebook wall, does it?
That's just virtue signaling, though, I feel yeah. like. Whenever people do that, that's such a cringy thing. And that's the thing, is like, I know a lot of people who are like that, like, you know, and I don't have the heart to just, like, that's why I am the way I am. That's why I'm cynical, is because it's easy to just say you're sorry. It's mm-hmm. easy to say, oh yeah, I accept all people of races, creeds, or whatever. But what else do you do other than declare those things?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, what other steps are you doing? Because, like, it's so easy to say that. It's so easy to say, okay, well, you know, I'm not a racist. Like, and then I'm pretty sure we had a conversation about this before, where it's not enough, especially these days, just not be, you know, something. You have to be actively anti something.
Yes, bingo. Bingo.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to be anti misogyny, anti, you know, TERF, anti racist. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be, you can't just, like, stay in the middle and say, I'm not into that stuff.
I don't want to,
like, so what do you believe in, bro? You know?
Sorry, Kimmy, what was that?
When people like to say, I don't want to pick a side, I choose the middle ground. And especially when they do, it's another form of subtle gaslighting. They make it seem like, I am so enlightened, I'm not going to pick your side or this side, I'm staying out of it. Aww. Sorry, bucko. You have automatically cast yourself in the side of the people who already hold more weight and privilege by
yeah you. And that also screams, like, privilege too, and this is something that I, you know, when I'm having conversations with my white friends, is, you know, I always tell them, like, you know, we all have our privileges. I have a privilege as a cis woman, you know, versus, like, you know, trans women, you know, and people who are, like, non-binary and all that. Like, I have a lot of privileges, and it's the same thing with, you know, the privilege that we have. When I tell people, like, it's easier for some people to just say, I don't want to be a part of that, because it will never affect them whether they try to participate in it or decide to not participate in it, because it will never affect their lives. Mm-hmm. People, like, people of color, trans people, you know, people with disabilities, like, they have, like, issues, and, like, they have challenges that they can never walk away from.
Yeah.
That people who don't have to worry about any of that can. Like, they can say, oh yeah, I'm tired of this, I need to walk away. That is something that they are privileged to do. That doesn't mean that they're bad people. It's just that, like, you know, it's never going to affect them whether they decide to participate or not. And that's something that I always have to tell people, like, you know, reeling it back into HEMA, you know, this is what I have to tell people, is that, like, yeah, it's easy for certain people who are of certain size, of certain height, of certain build, to just walk away from these conversations, not participate in conversations of, you know, accessibility. Because I'm super, like, I've become such, like, an outspoken person about this stuff at this point. You know, it's easy for them to say, yeah, you know, I don't have to care about it. I can't, though, because everything that I do within, you know, the community, within the sport, affects me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea of that affects me. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, that it's always, there's always some kind of privilege that we all have, and it affords us to be able to walk away from it and not be affected by it, and or participate in it, even though it's not going to benefit us. And so I think, you know, going back to, like, the idea of how do we determine if someone's,
you know, okay to be like not be cast out anymore. Like, that's what I look for too, is like, what else are you doing aside from saying I'm not any of these things anymore? Remember Brittany, when we had that podcast, was it last month? She like went in and, you know, she was like, yeah, I was brainwashed and I was like, you know, in a cult basically. And she like got into like a lot of these really uncomfortable and painful details that weren't really, you know, it wasn't benefiting her aside from saying I did all of these crappy things, you know, and to me, and not only that, like, not only was she, you know, not only was she saying all of that stuff, like, before all of this came to light, before I even knew about all of that about her, she's always been like nice to me, like personally, like we talk in private messages. She's like super helpful. She's always been encouraging. And, you know, like with the size difference and like the things that I've like expressed with my frustration in the sport, she's always like come up to me and like said all of these really encouraging things. That's, you know, for the most part, has prevented me from like leaving HEMA. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's something that, you know, people don't know, you know, aside from like what they heard in, you know, in the podcast. And so for me, like, that's like a good example of that. Of course, not everybody's perfect. Like, there are still things that, like, you know, maybe that's not enough for other people. But like, for me, at least, like, you know, that's like a really good example of like, when is enough and when is, you know, accepting like a good time to, you know, when is accepting someone back a good time? And, you know, I feel like the way that Brittany handled herself in the podcast that we had, you know, and admitting all of the stuff that, you know, even though she was like manipulated and preyed upon, she still owned up to the stuff that she did. And I think that's a lot of like taking accountability. That's a huge, you know, to be put in that a crappy situation and to think that like it's okay for you to like do that and like, you know, and then owning up to it even though you were actually thrust into that situation. It's a lot. Because it's okay, it's so easy to just say, oh yeah, but they made me do it. It's so easy to just say that. It's just easy to say I was manipulated into doing it versus saying, yes, I was manipulated into doing it, but I also did those things. I also hurt the people that I hurt. And that to me, like, I think it's a good example of, you know, more than just saying, oh yeah, I'm inclusive. Oh yeah, I'm anti all of these things. Then just, you know, what other things are you doing?
Yeah. I think the middle ground is fertile ground for bad behaviors, toxic behaviors, like just saying, you know, what's the saying goes, silence is violence, right?
Yes.
So like if people are, you know, wrongdoers or predators or just like nasty elements that are effectively given a pass because there are people who are not prepared to stand up to it and repel that kind of activity and that behavior. But what you were saying about Brittany, is like that there she was saying, you know, yes, I was manipulated. And I, you know, like you said, she could have just leaned into that. I was manipulated, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a victim kind of thing. But she, of course, she was manipulated and it was horrible what happened. But that she wanted to make reparations.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Active, actionable accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, you know, you admitted to the things that you did and that you admitted it to, that they're wrong. What do you do about it? You know, I feel like that's a question that, like, you know, and even with me, I have my own biases in the past. I've had my own like share of like bad ideologies when I was younger, but it's like, where did it start and what did I do to change it once I found out that it's, you know, not the right thing to like believe in. You know, and it all goes down to like, you know, active accountability. Like, what are you doing to actively change these things? Like, again, like what you're saying, silence is violence. Not doing anything, it's just, you know,
encourages
you're still supporting it in some ways by not doing anything about it.
I think like we've all been on this earth long enough to witness people who've got, you know, strayed from the path, let's say, and sometimes ourselves too, and they've managed to turn it around. I know a good few people myself who like have managed to have gone really like far into ideologies or behaviors, but then had a kind of, whether it's a Damascus moment or a gradual change of attitude. I know you, Kimmy, and you, Jonna, have known folks like that. Obviously we're not naming and shaming anyone here, but we know that it is possible for people to become better people over time through, you know, a lot of like this accountability and stuff. So, you know, it's one of the criticisms of cancel culture that you often hear is that it just drives them further into the arms of people like that. And once they've been kicked out from the community, they're just going to, you know, gain even more sympathy from the people that you don't want them to become like.
Yeah.
Well, I think setting folks up with a choice. So people can, like again, if we've already concluded the severity or the harm of the offense or offenses are to a level that deserves a second chance, you don't just open the doors back up. If they don't come to you with what they have planned, then you lay down a set of ground rules. Mm. And if someone legitimately wants to change, they'll say, you know what? That sounds fine. I will absolutely do that. Mm. And if they give you a bunch of gruff about it, they weren't necessarily savable or worthy, and I hate to say it, but it's true, deserving of that second chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Manage expectations, and that comes from clear communication. Hopefully, an organization that you join already has a clear code of conduct, but if it doesn't, make sure that you outline, based on the specific situation, what your expectations are. Leave no room for a person to either guess or step foot over these rules.
Mm. That's really important. I think we've touched on this in previous podcasts about, well, this is something I've witnessed in my 12 years of HEMA, nearly 12 years of HEMA, is that every HEMA club starts off as an itty bitty club, which is just a group of pals. And it's small and it's informal and it's fun and everyone knows everyone and what have you. I think it was Brittany that was talking about this last time. And you think, we don't need rules. We're just friends. We know where the boundaries are. And then the club gets bigger and it gets successful. Mm-hmm. And then something goes wrong. And then they go, oh, we need some boundaries. We need to set some expectations. We need some rules.
Where did that come from? Sorry. You invited me here. I'm so sorry.
I love the little sad trombone. So, yeah, I mean, it's always like, you know, after the horse has bolted, these lessons are learned. And it kind of, you know, is when that's what happens in Facebook groups as well and other online communities, you end up having to have rules.
Yeah.
Just so that people know. And often these are, like you're kind of saying there, Kimmy, if someone isn't deserving or, you know, if they're acting in bad faith.
Yes.
Then they're not going to even attempt to appeal for that second chance. They're just going to bugger off somewhere else.
Or they're going to keep boundary pushing, and that just, you know, when a person or if a person does that, that right there is just proof in the pudding.
I'm concerned. I mean, think about it, like when people are kicked out of a community, they either know that they did something wrong and they're well, this is just I'm just thinking aloud here. They either know that they've done something wrong and they regret it and they want to work their way back, or they think there's no way they'll take me back now. What I did was just too awful. Or third option, they don't think they did anything wrong at all.
Yep.
So what next sort of question I'll put to you, Kimmy, is why do some people persist with toxic behaviors? Why does it happen?
So this can happen for numerous different means or a combination of these things. Sometimes it can even stem from learned behavior or a trauma response in someone themselves, where they're constantly looking for a need or a sense of control. That need or sense of control can also stem from, you know, less compassionate backgrounds, where some people just feel better, more superior when they can control a situation. Other reasons can be there has never been consequences for these actions, and we see it all the time, the way that people allow and enable certain behaviors to slide for a very long time. Sometimes this can actually come from a bit of a naive place, where potentially someone's had a persistent toxic behavior because they legitimately didn't know better. Maybe they were socialized to where this was normal. Maybe it can even come from or stem from a place where they're neurodivergent and they just haven't picked up on the social cues over the course of their life.
Yeah.
This is wrong. And sometimes, unfortunately, people persist with toxic behaviors. This is not usually the main perpetrators, but they do exist out there. Some people are legitimately predators and unsafe people and boundary pushers. Some people I've even found are boundary pushers for no other reason than they think everything is a game. Don't understand that people's emotions and feelings of safety are not something to bid against.
Yeah.
So that's sometimes why I have found, like, those are varying reasons or combinations thereof, why some people will persist with toxic behaviors. But again, if you set people up with an expectation of what behaviors are or are not acceptable, and if someone crosses those boundaries, you have actionable things in place and what you want to see, then at this point, you can no longer say that there hasn't been consequences or that they did not know better.
I think the first one that you hit on there, the enablers, we've all been enablers at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, I know I have.
Girl.
How many of us have our own internalized misogyny as femme-presenting folks?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Looking past red flags.
Girl, that's me. That's my main problem.
Yeah. Well, especially because we're socialized that we'll be allowed to maybe belong if we also keep quiet. Don't be one of those women. Don't be one of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't make you uncomfortable. If I make you uncomfortable, if I make them uncomfortable, they're not going to like me.
Yeah.
It's like, I can fix him.
I can see his potential.
One time he held a door open for me. He's got potential.
Hey, new moon in the freaking tiger. It's in bulk. No more projects. No more falling. We got the three A's.
Girl. Seriously though.
Accountability. Seriously, though.
I'm not about that life anymore. Like, I thought about it and I'm like, I'm going to judge you based on like how you treat me. Like, okay. So like, I was talking to like a couple of my friends last weekend and I was telling them about the situation and they were like, it is good to be understanding of why someone acts the way they act, like what Kimmy broke down earlier, but also like, that's not to say that you're just going to like, give them all the slack just because, oh yeah, they had like a really hard upbringing, or like, oh yeah, you know, they're trying to like undo all of the toxic behaviors that they've, you know, acquired as they were growing up. And, you know, I was talking to my friends about this, and I was like, yeah, you know, like, they said they were sorry, and, you know, they explained why. And my friend was like, yeah, but they're all, they also, like, need to, like, understand that, like, they still have to be accountable for how they made you feel. And I was like, yeah, obviously. But, like,
I'd like to think.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's hard. Like, we're, you know, like, how many chances do you do again? Like, you know, depending on, like, I guess it depends on the person, too. Like, for some people, like, oh, yeah, you made me feel this way. You're dead to me forever. I'm not really that kind of person. I am kind. And I believe in the goodness of everybody.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
And so I try to give people a chance. Sometimes I give people who don't deserve chances. And I've always had my
Gianna.
What's that?
And then how many more chances do you give them?
I know I only give them one, I think. I'm pretty sure it's only one chance. Because I did that with my ex last year. I was like, I gave him one chance to, like, not be a fucking weirdo, and he blew it. And I'm like, dude, like, I'm out. I blocked him on everything. Like, if he wants to, like, talk to me, he's gonna have to, like, I don't know, like, make some kind of, like, weird, like, account to, like, message me. But, like, I blocked him on every possible, like, thing, even my phone. So, and I think, you know, I'm still not perfect in terms of, like, boundaries and, like, canceling, like, people who make me feel like shit in my life. I'm still, I don't know, like, I don't know how to do it. Like, I'm getting there, though. Like, the time elapsed between me and canceling someone is slowly growing thinner. Like, I went from, like, 7 years to, like, 5 months. So I think that's, like, big growth.
Yeah, you're doing better than me.
So, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's, but again, like, having, so one of the things that I learned in therapy is that, you know, one of the questions that my therapist asked me, and I don't know, like, you know, I was thinking about it this before, and I guess not everybody's going to agree with this. One of the things that I had to think about, had to reflect on in one of my therapy sessions is my therapist asked me, and this was when I was dealing with the child abuse that I experienced with my dad. And so we were discussing it, and my therapist goes, what do you think, you know, made him that way? And I was like, I've never really thought of that. And so, you know, just like, and that's kind of like been like the operating like process in my brain whenever I like see someone, and just having a kid too. You know, we're all affected by our surroundings. We're all affected by how people treat us. I mean, some behavior stuff, you know, could be biological from, like, hormones or whatever. But, like, we are very much affected by our surroundings and, you know, whatever it is that is immediate to us. And so that's something that, like, I had to think about when I went to therapy and, like, having to go through, like, the grief and the anger of what happened to me as a child and how it affected me as an adult. And then having to, like, think beyond my own personal, like, struggles and, like, okay, what did that person, like, go through to, like, make them be that way? And it's not necessarily, like, you know, an exercise on, like, oh, okay, so I'm going to forgive them. It's more of, like, everybody goes through, like, some hard shit in their life. Like, I feel like there's not a person in the world that doesn't go through shit. I don't know where this is going, but, like, I'm just, like, thinking about, like, how
there's ways to be compassionate and understanding.
Yeah, and I feel like there are some people who are it's hard for some people to be there, and they have good reasons for them to not to be as, like, hard on others. It's just not it's not something that is for me, because, like, for the longest time I was just angry. And for the longest time, I was just like, I've been wronged. That was, like, my whole child and adult life, is that I'm a victim. Like, this has fucked up my life. Mm-hmm. And having that perspective, though, I learned that, like, being compassionate and being kind toward others, like, even people who hurt me, is a lot easier. And it's not even just, like, forgiving them and letting things go. It's a lot easier for me to just, like, not necessarily take things as seriously or as personally, but, like, it's a lot easier for me to just, like, be kinder to myself and, like, really, like, just, like, get over it easily. Like, that's not to say that I still didn't get hurt. I still got hurt. It still hurt, you know, with, like, painful relationships and all that and, you know, shitty people that I've met who treated me bad. But, like, just thinking about, like, okay, well, what kind of shit they went through for them to be such a nasty person. Uh-huh. And it's kind of, like, it's a lot easier for me to just, like, okay, I'm going to let this go. Like, uh-huh. You know, and that's because I also, like, worked on myself. Like, I know that I'm not, like, just making excuses. Like, I've done the work. But it's a lot, I've learned personally, at least, that it's a lot easier for me to be compassionate and be kinder to others, especially when they come to you and say, I'm sorry, like, I fucked up. It's a lot easier for me to just say, okay, I accept it, but, like, what are you gonna do, you know, versus, like, no, you're dead to me forever. Like, it's I've learned, and this is from experience, like, I've learned holding on to that kind of anger and, like, holding on to that kind of resentment is so exhausting. I spent most of my life feeling that way, and I was exhausted by it by the time I was in my late 20s.
Yeah. It's like, what do they say? Resentment is like holding, it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person's going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and honestly, like, as cliche as it is to say, like, life is fucking short, y'all. Like, I don't want to, like, hold on to, you know, being wronged by, you know, someone.
Mm.
You know, like,
I think this is what makes it difficult. Enablers, like, we've all been enablers at some point. We've all given people the pass for shitty behavior, hoping that they'll change. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, as we said, Jonna, like, you know, it's important to understand and see the humanity in people and understand why they are like that.
Yeah.
Rather than just hating them for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, you know, that's how you start to get closure about, you know, relationships that have hurt you in the past and things like this. But I think when we are all as individuals faced with someone's shitty behavior, we've got that choice, haven't we? Do we, you know, like he said, where do you put the line? Do we see their humanity and decide, like, you need to be a better person and that's on you. You've got to go and be a better person out of this community. Or do we say, you need to be a better person and we need to make you that better person? Mm. I think that's kind of where the line is.
Yeah. And that's something that you kind of, you know, also have to dedicate time to. You can't just immediately, like, do it in the day, you know.
Right.
So it's also an investment on time. Like, how invested are you in this person, or how invested are you in whatever it is?
Not only that, but again, by investing in this person, am I investing in potential without action, or am I investing in a person that has the ability and desire for change?
Oh, I feel so targeted by this.
Welcome. Welcome to Cancel Culture, Second Chances, and Jonna's love life.
Girl, which is non-existent. I do not have a love life. I wish I did, but I have nothing.
Dory, I'm eating cheesecake. It's really unprofessional.
No, it's not. It's freaking great. You should pick it up.
My kid made it. It's great.
You know what? That's cheesecake for mental health, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Cheesecake and mental health. Sorry, it's cheesecake and mental health.
It's medicinal.
Yeah.
So the next thing that we got on this list that Kimmy read out was the need for control. Right. Why do people persist with toxic behaviors? Because there is a need for control.
Well, that plus, like, we're comfortable with it. If we have toxic behaviors that we're trying to like undo, when you're going through like the change, and this is me speaking from my own experiences, it's easy to slide back to our toxic behaviors because we're familiar with it. It feels safe. Self-sabotage.
To do that, so I get this that makes me more comfortable.
Sorry, can we say that again?
It can often come from this place of like, if I do this, it forces this reaction or forces this person or shuts down this thing, which then makes me feel more comfortable or makes me feel like I'm in a superior position, which I feel the need to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say, Kimmy, or either of you, like the kind of like need for control, is that why, you know, toxic people quite frequently, and I say this as the head of a HEMA club, often end up as leaders?
Absolutely. It doesn't mean that every leader is like that whatsoever, mm-hmm. but I mean, there's absolutely a correlation. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, didn't they do that thing where they discovered like a disproportionate number of CEOs as like psychopaths or something like that? Mm-hmm. It's that desire for control, and
a position of power.
Position of power, no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So no consequences is the next one. I mean, that kind of comes from the enabling thing, but yeah. Also the no consequences thing can be a product of someone from like an older generation.
Yep.
Or just being in a different environment where their behaviors aren't a problem.
Because either everyone else is doing it or they're in an environment where even if people are uncomfortable, everyone's been socialized to not say anything about it.
Yeah. So no one is going to speak up.
Past where it's like, sorry, like whether I'm dealing with adults or children, a phrasing I like to use is, we don't do that here.
Yeah.
Or we don't say that here. Again, very clearly setting an expectation of, it doesn't matter if this is okay elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm letting you know that in this environment or in this space, we do not do this.
Mm-hmm. And we is all of us, including you.
Yes. The royal we.
Yeah. And the, so following on from that was, I didn't know better.
Well, now you do.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, what do you do with the knowledge? If somebody says, okay, well, what you did is crappy. Oh, I didn't know that that was crappy. Okay, well, now you do. What do you do? Do you do it again?
Mm.
Or do you stop that behavior?
The didn't know better one's interesting because people will lean hard into that.
Oh, will they ever? It's also why it's good that if you have a club and you have a code of conduct and if you are giving someone a second chance, I think it's very important to document things. Mm-hmm. Have a person sign a piece of paper that says, I've agreed to X, Y, and Z as like as a 3-month probation of coming back to the club, whatever it heckin looks like. Mm-hmm. So that way, if they lean hard into I didn't know better, you can pull up stuff that says, well, actually, mm-hmm. you did.
Yeah.
So how, like, as individuals, how should we act? How should we behave when we come across toxic behavior, whether that's online or in person? Who's going to talk?
Like Otto DeFaro, the iron gate, you shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably just try and like call them out on it.
No fluffy behavior, like no fluffy language.
Yeah, definitely call them out. I mean, I still struggle with it at times.
Call them
like,
in as well is a good thing to do, depending on the situation where you private message them.
Mm.
There needs to be a calling of some sort.
Yeah,
I was called in recently. You know about this, Kimmy.
Yep.
So I like my event, by the sort, and this kind of like goes into didn't know any better as well. And there were no consequences, and I was enabled, and I need to have a need for control. by the sword, as you know, is an event originally, not a podcast, but it's now a podcast as well. It was originally an event for women that I came up with the idea in 2012, and I made it a reality in 2017. And then I got folks coming to me saying, I don't identify as a woman. but I still want to come to your event. So I was like, oh, cool. So then I had to, well, I didn't have to, but I wanted to change the strap line for my event to women and non-binary folks, just to sort of to invite those people in because I want them there. And I had for women and NBs, and someone, a good friend of mine, called me in about it, and they said, would you consider changing the language of that, of your strap line? And I was like, huh, why is that? And they said, because, and sent me a long article on like the use of language and like non-binary, the non-binary trans community is, you know, is evolving quickly. In terms of language, you know, it's all kind of in motion, but already like there's this kind of idea being floating around that if you have the word women and NBs, it's kind of like saying NBs are women light, as it were, rather than what they actually are, which is non-binary people or people within the entire non-binary umbrella, which encompasses infinite things.
So what did you do after you were called in, Fran?
I changed my behavior.
What? No.
I changed it and I was accountable.
What?
Well, then
that's amazing.
Then another person who was non-binary said to me, why does it say something else here and something else here? And I said, oh, because I haven't changed it yet. Let me change it. And they were like, oh, cool. Thank you for letting me know. Thank you for making that clear. So I figured like, right, if my language, if that word envy or non-binary is a problem for some people and other people say it's not a problem, I could have just gone, but my non-binary friend here says it's okay, therefore I can just leave it, right? A bit like, you know, Johnny was saying, my Asian friend's okay with this, so, you know,
are they really, or have they just not said anything yet?
Yeah, it's like saying I can use the N-word because my black friend's okay with it, you know.
Yeah, and again, we're not a monolith. Like Asian people aren't a monolith, black people aren't a monolith, and
non-binary
so
people
and so
aren't
forth.
A monolith, so they definitely are not a monolith.
Well, now I want to be a monolith.
You are a monolith, Kimmy.
So I thought, if I can use a different word that everyone is fine with, then I'll use that So I used marginalized genders, which is longer and a bit more of a mouthful, but the meaning of the word is important.
Umbrella.
Yeah. So yeah, that was an example of how I was called in. So calling in is a very important thing, and I think calling someone in is giving them a chance, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Because, like, you can just ignore. I mean, in my case, there are just some people that I'm not gonna, you know, dedicate energy to. But like, if I call you out on something, it's because I care about you enough to say you're being shitty right now.
And that's earned, as you were speaking of earlier, Jonna, about like you can't just give white people a pass. You have to, through certain collection of behaviors over time, figure out, can you trust this person? Have they earned that? Mm-hmm. And when you call someone in or out, as I've been called in, Fran just talked about how they were called in, see it not as an attack, but as this person, one, cares about me enough. Two, cares about me enough. They're trying to give me a chance to keep me around.
Yeah.
And three, at least up to now, I've given them at least a hankering that I might be amicable to this call in or call out and to change. Mm. But that's also like that has to be earned again. Like who do we give that to?
Yeah. Who do we give that to? Who's earned that right? So dealing with toxic behavior online, in person, call it out, we've said.
In or out.
Yeah, call it in, call it out. I think I've witnessed myself as a moderator in a Facebook group. If when someone in an online community comments on a post with a question, usually like, what does this mean? Or why would you do that? And it, they'll make a comment and it might be insensitively delivered or under the guise of, you know, I didn't know any better or whatever. Or, you know, maybe they genuinely didn't know any better. And there'll just be an enormous dogpiling of people calling them out.
Yeah.
And to the point where they just walk away. And I think as a moderator, I've seen it happen a couple of times where I just thought, folks, you really messed that one up. You know, one person goes in and says, oh, we don't do that here. And then the next person comes in and says, you should know better, blah, blah, blah. And then everyone just tears into this person who may have been speaking in bad faith. We don't know. Often they're like someone that we haven't come across before. But it's ugly to witness and it disappoints me when it happens. And I, you know, we say, oh, yeah, let's call them out. But if everyone's like, yeah, I'm so ready to call people out kind of thing, it's toxic in itself.
It's very toxic. I've gotten in that situation. This was before I started HEMA. There's this person I knew from when I was living in Florida, and she wanted to just like form a group, like this was like a dead ass like witch hunting group that she was trying to like get people to just like, let's jump into this person's comment section and like argue with them and stuff. And I'm like, as a person, and this girl was a white person, and as a person of color, I was like, that's exhausting. I was like, if you have the energy for that, which I know a lot of my white friends do, like, this is like one thing that I love about white people who just get it, is that they have that fucking energy and they will like use that energy. Like, some of my friends are like they've like said, like, I will throw hands for you. And I'm like, thanks. But like, it's exhausting though. To go into that like crusade of like, I'm gonna go into every comment section, I'm gonna fight everyone. Not everybody has that kind of emotional capacity though. Like, I know I don't. Like, I've come into terms with the fact that like anything that I do that people may learn something from is gonna be a voluntary thing. Like, I'm never gonna go out of my way to like educate someone, unless I really care about them or I'm like in a mood to like impart like my own experiences. But like it's very almost like red flaggy to the point of like it's a little extreme for you. And what is it achieving too? Like, what is the goal of this when there are other ways? And maybe not everybody's gonna agree with this, but there are other ways to like reach other people versus just like jumping into, you know, threads and fighting with people. I mean, there are cases where you have to, but then in my experience, for the most part, it's really not worth it.
I think the last 2 years have sapped everyone's energy so much that they don't have the capacity for that anymore anyway. I haven't witnessed much of it myself. I detoxed my social media a few years back so that I don't get any notifications about anything. Because it was just too tempting to get sucked into a thread and be commenting there. You know, it's that classic someone is wrong on the internet kind of thing. Yeah. And you're there all night being the keyboard warrior, arguing with someone who's never going to listen to you and see it from your point of view. But I don't see it that much nowadays. But like we say, I think the compassion that you mentioned earlier, Jonna, mm-hmm. Considering why someone is like that, why they'd see like that, that in itself requires huge amounts of energy. It's like, yeah, that, why do I have to educate you kind of thing?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be nice if we can just, you know, fence?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Let's just fight.
Isn't that great? Wouldn't that be great if we all had the ability to just show up and not have to worry about expending that kind of extra energy and just fence?
Which kind of brings me to the final point. How does all of this stuff you know, fighting online, cancel culture, toxic people in the community. How does that affect our mental health?
We've all used the word exhausting many times during this podcast already.
Where's past the cheesecake?
I'm out of tea and you're getting more cheesecake. Oh boy. It is exhausting.
Yeah.
And it really affects, so speaking from my own experiences, it absolutely affects my ability and how much of my physical and mental energy I can dedicate to learning new things, as well as the physical and mental energy that it takes to teach things to new people. It's away from everything.
Yeah. And someone suffering with a chronic illness as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole other, you know, we like to use the term that this is very common in disability and chronic illness communities, that no, we don't all have the same 24 hours in a day.
No.
Set of folks that aren't disabled but are living within a more targeted minority group. No, I can't just show up and fence. Am I going to have to, as a disabled person, how accessible is this? Will there be stairs? Two, will there be change rooms for me, let alone change rooms or a safe space if you happen to be a gender non-conforming person?
Exactly.
Trans person, will I have to worry about my instructor making some sort of off comment about, oh, during our warm up, you can happily do girl push ups if they're easier for you?
What is a girl push up? Sorry. What is that?
It's unfortunately something that I was told numerous times growing up, that it's any sort of moderation from a push-up that involves you using your knees. It is supposed to make the push-up somewhat easier. So by calling it a girl push-up, you are insinuating that you naturally think that girls need something that is easier because they are weaker. There are all of these different micro or non-micro aggressions that folks have to face that is exhausting before we can even think about going into a space. And let's just say we're in a space where it's already been proven to us, where it's like, man, this is the only HEMA school here. I really want to learn sword fighting, but I really hate it because my instructor misgenders me every time, no matter what I say. Well, here's my choice. I either give up learning fencing or I shut up and I take this. Even though when I leave my fencing class, I'm not leaving with a sense of joy the way the other people are, because I now have to deal with 2 hours of what it felt like having my entire identity completely and utterly disrespected by this individual. No, we can't just show up and fence. No, we don't have the same 24 hours a day. No, we aren't given the same mental, emotional, and physical capacities to do the same thing.
I think this is what it boils down to, in terms of toxic people, problematic people in the community, cancel culture. Like, why do we cancel them? Well, we cancel them because if we keep them in the community, there are lots of people that aren't going to show up.
Yep. And they're already the people that have barriers to showing up to begin with.
Yeah, the people with a lot of pressures on them anyway, who are already, you know, underprivileged in lots of different ways. They don't need any, if you give them one more reason not to go, then, you know, that's all it's going to take.
And you can lose them forever. Not only lose them forever, but you're adding another experience to their collective experiences, which tell them, I don't belong.
I don't belong. It isn't safe here.
For me. Exactly. Hmm. And it just perpetuates this exclusion of these folks.
Hmm. So it's better to keep out one person than an entire, you know, demographic.
Agreed wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
I think that's what don't rock the boat enabler folks fail to consider. or fail to take seriously, at least. I know, like, of one example in my past of an individual who was kicked out of various groups, who it turns out, and, you know, online groups and in real life groups, and it turned out that there were whole bunches of people who weren't turning up to training anymore because of this person's behavior.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they're not there, because they're just voting with their feet, because, well, why the hell would they, wouldn't they? You're not hearing the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the behavior continues, because there's no one there to sort of say, stop that.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what happened to Bethany over there. Oh, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, all of a sudden, why are all these women not showing up? Oh, it's because of that one particular individual who was causing problems. And then, you know, take that person away and the problem's gone.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh,
you fix the staircase, the broken staircase, and suddenly no one trips anymore.
I think that's a good place to conclude.
A leftist ending to
a leftist ending. Story.
A leftist ending to this fairy tale story. We fixed the broken stair and no one was injured going up or down the staircase ever again.
Yep, take out the rotten plank.
Yes.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, one other thing too is, like, you know, what, before we, like, completely end this, is that, like, when you remove something like that, you create a space for another person to come in, for new people to come in, who's probably going to be more aligned with what you know your values are.
Exactly.
Like, that's something that, like, I always have to, like, remind myself to whenever I lose people, or people decide to, like, you know, say, you know, oh, this is not a good fit, like, you're not a good fit for me. I'm like, cool,
this, that I'm making, like, someone or something that is.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, this is just like an opportunity for someone else to come along. If you don't fit in, then you don't. It's just you know, I think in, like, all contexts, is that, you know, what is this person bringing in to the club setting? And if they are removed, it's just an opportunity for someone else to replace that spot. And
what are we making room for
with everybody else in a more positive way?
It's often like it's often a teaching moment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like, I think there was a moment in your club that something happened like that, which spawned a kind of discussion. And
oh yeah, I feel like with, you know, from the past episodes that we've done, like, just using my club as an example, there has been a huge shift in our culture too, especially with how big we are now. Mm-hmm. We have more of, like, a safer, like, system when we spar. You know, our classes are especially when we're doing free play, it's a lot more not only organized, but, like, we're also supervised now. And so,
and hopefully it feels safer.
I've been sparring a lot, girl.
I know. I've been watching you.
And this
good.
Feels safe as fuck.
This is good.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your thoughts with me.
As always, thank you so much for having me.
It's been great as usual.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'll catch up with you both soon. Take care.
Take Bye. Care. Love you all.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform, or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.